Hello, and welcome to the Scotchcast. This is episode 22 for the week of December 22nd, 2013. I believe this might be our last episode of the year. Maybe one more, probably for Game of the Year stuff. But joining me today, my name is Thurbleton, is Durin.
Oh, hi.
Hello.
Thrown off Durin.
Hello. How are you? We're going to get close up in our mics, right, Squiddle?
Hi, everyone. I'd like to welcome y'all tonight.
And is possibly equally close up in his mic is Shinboy, 630.
Hey, guys. It's episode 22 on the week of the 22nd. Think about it.
Oh, shit.
I got it.
Wow. All
I'm
right,
not
sweet.
Further away.
Okay.
I had to stand up to do that, so that's not
bad. Gotta love those hanging mics, right? Or at least the ones that are not just right on your headset.
I want to get one with a boom that I can just like pull real close and then just kind of let it go and it will just drift back into a position where it was originally set.
Oh, that'd be so great.
Like a studio awesome. Mic?
Yeah.
Like a studio?
Yeah, boom. Like a studio boom.
Yep.
Oh, man.
Legit.
Sit here and talk about just crazy mic setups for 3 hours.
Yeah, we were going to do just a general podcast about what we've been playing, but I think we need to together make, you know, a boom for Squiddle, right, guys?
Oh, let me tell you, yeah, okay, I'm a master at making a boom. Mine is a very high quality boom setup.
Do tell.
It's not like ghetto rigged in any way at all.
Share it with the class.
I believe we had an argument about whether whose was more ghetto rigged, yours or mine.
Well, okay. Mine is more like MacGyver rigged.
Okay.
Because
so bubblegum and toothpicks.
Well, it's basically like a lamp stand body, like the body of a lamp, like a
Pixar lamp,
like an architect lamp. Yeah. And then basically we pull the lamp part off on the top, and then where the screw goes through the actual lampshade part or whatever, I took a mouse pad and I cut strips of the mouse pad and ran that through the screw hole and kind of screwed that in there, and then ran that through on the mic itself. So there's like dangling the mic from there, ran that through those screw holes there to actually like dangle the mic. But it turns out the Blue Yeti mic is incredibly heavy.
Oh yeah.
Well, the stand of it is.
No, even just the mic itself is pretty damn heavy for this type of setup. So
okay, yeah.
I have two workout ball things attached to the back of the stand of the lamp stand, and they're basically just held onto it with duct tape. So basically, what I'm saying is my as if the Blue Yeti mic didn't already look phallic enough, it's attached to an erect metal rod with two balls at the base.
Tell me about your erect metal rod. Nice.
All right. Actually, I think we might just stick with the normal episode, you guys.
No, third. Paint us a word picture on this audio podcast of your visual setup.
Jeez. I have because I live in Portland. I guess it's just, you know. Space.
Wait, your mic has a fedora on?
No, it is not. That's on my shelf. But to maximize my space, I have a loft bed from IKEA. Also, that was just the cheapest thing I could find. And my desk is underneath it, and my mic is hanging from there.
Oh. I'm interpreting that as your mic is wearing a fedora.
Yes. It's visualized, if you will, the fedora holding up the mic from upside down.
Okay.
Interesting.
Let's talk about what we've been playing, you guys. Starting off with Squiddle, I guess. Anything new?
Okay.
The Steam sale is upon us at the time of this recording, so...
It is. I missed out on one of the things I was actually interested in, which was the Space Commander. What's a space game? I'm interested in it, and I don't even know the name. That's how interested I am.
Starbound.
There we go.
Oh,
that's a space game. Wait,
was that actually on sale?
I was like Space Engineers?
The first day, I think it was.
Yeah, it was on sale.
Oh, wow.
And I completely missed it because I didn't realize they were doing a holiday sale for reasons unknown.
Those sales lasted. If it was a was it a daily or was it a flash sale?
I don't know.
The dailies last 48 hours.
As soon as I heard about it, when I got on yesterday, I went and checked, and it was not there.
Okay,
it
must have been a flash sale.
And then I checked the actual page of the game, and there was no discount. So, but I did end up playing. Cloud Icarus, was it?
Guns of Icarus.
Guns of Icarus. We played that yesterday, and surprisingly fun.
Now, could you describe what that game is like? Because if it's the one I'm thinking of, I'm curious about it.
Okay, how about this? I'll ask you a couple questions, and you say yes or no. Do you like ships?
Typically, yeah, for the most part.
Okay. Do you like pirates?
I'm not the biggest fan of pirates. I mean, but yeah. Who doesn't like a good pirate?
Pyrannical combat.
Okay. Do you like steampunk?
Yes. Do you like steampunk?
I like some aspects of steampunk. Sure. Maybe a floating ship.
Portland, of course, he likes steampunk.
Perhaps an airship.
Yep.
Ooh, yeah, an airship. There we go.
The big old tarp and a balloon in it. Yeah. So it's a fun game. I mean, absolutely fun, especially when you can ram other people and you just bounce off. It's absolutely hilarious.
Yeah, basically it is a pure nonsense airship combat game.
Yep.
Okay.
But you get to name your ship, which is probably the best part of that game.
Now, how is the combat done? Like, is it just like one person per boat, like Assassin's Creed style almost?
No, you have a crew of four.
Yep.
On each ship. You have one captain, obviously, and then the other three are split between any combination of engineers and gunners. So, two of one of the other is probably your best bet.
The most fun I had with is, as Shun was going to say, is the engineer. You can go around and fix things. So when your ship gets attacked or damaged, you have to go around and whack it with a wrench.
Sure, whack it TF2 style is pretty fun.
Yeah, total TF2 style, engineer style. And it was actually pretty fun. I had more fun doing that, trying to keep the ship afloat, than actually trying to target and aim, because our pilot, at least in mine, kept running me into the ground, or us into the ground, so it was very hard to target at some points. So I had more fun trying to keep the ship afloat by whacking it with my wrench. It's good. I enjoyed it. I had a really good time with it. I would love to do it again.
The menus outside, like the menu and UI outside of actually playing the game, is just horrid.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
It's horrendous. It really is. The one thing I will comment that I did like is that if you do change your graphic settings, it changes it on the fly. You don't have to close out of the game. But when I changed it, my game crashed. Maybe a Windows 8.1 issue.
Between you, me, and Crash all having crash issues, we're the only three people I know out of the crew that we were playing with that were all on Windows 8.
Okay.
So I think it's a Windows 8 issue.
Well, another Windows 8 issue is I cannot get Just Cause to play. And uh-oh. I'm very sad
that's
about
travesty.
That. Yeah.
Now, is it – Just Cause is the mod, I'm assuming, the multiplayer. Is Guns of that is a fan-built creation. Is Guns of Icarus early access, or is that game out?
It's out.
It's out. Okay. It is definitely available. The only thing it's fun if you don't take it too seriously. People will, I guess, like it if you want like an eye patch or different things. It's all microtransaction based, but you can jump in there and just have shit tons of fun.
Sweet.
I would definitely recommend getting a full crew of four, though.
Yeah, people on Mumble or Vents don't. I wouldn't jump in there with just someone I didn't know.
Because that game, if you're playing sort of like quote unquote by yourself, as in without anyone else you know, that game sounds like it would be no fun at all, or seems like it'd be no fun at all.
Yeah. They do have the ability to, I believe, use your mic to talk within the game. You can enable that voice chat, but how reliable that is in most games, I mean, I don't know. It is what it is, but.
We had like a crew of eight, so like on 2v2s, we would have, our entire side would be manned by people on Mumble, and that was pretty fun.
Yep.
There's a lot of nonsense rockets everywhere.
I'm trying to think what other game I was playing. I guess today I was playing with you, Thurb, trying to finish up some Saints Row 4 stuff, get some more.
We did some Saints Rowing. That was fun.
More space in that, and I was surprised at how much more stupid that game got. Like, I thought I had reached stupidity when I stopped playing it. And that game just got dumber.
No, it just keeps getting dumb. It's the best.
And so, I don't know.
So it kind of that game. I did have a question about it. Like you, I mean, obviously, I know Thurb did. You, like, you played three as well, Squiddle, right?
Yes, I played those 1, 2, and 3.
So those insurance fraud missions,
mm-hmm.
were they? Did they always have the potential to be as ridiculous as they are in four, where you are like launching yourself into the sky?
No, that was just a four thing.
Okay, because I always thought that thing was absolute shit in the last game, but I had a blast with it in four.
Oh, it was. I mean, because you would try to get up and you would try to get momentum and fling yourself in front of a vehicle, and you wouldn't fly that far. And so you couldn't really – it took you forever to get gold level or whatever it is their settings were on that. And this one, you just basically dive down onto a car, get shot back up, go flying across the screen, and you're done. You know, within by the time you land. So
you're like flying through the air at like way faster than you should be doing flips, and physics is just like, I feel like taking the day off.
Yeah. So,
okay, well, good.
So
good enough.
Has anybody here played the either of the DLCs, either the Enter the Dominatrix or the Saint Save Christmas, which I think is just the dumbest name ever?
I have not. I have them. I did subscribe to the $20 you get all of them when
the season pass.
Season pass. So I know I have it. I have not played it yet. Now speaking of season pass, the one game I did do the season pass on was BioShock Infinite, and I did play whatever the name of that one was.
Oh, the
DLC.
Yeah,
the actual full game of it. And I had mixed feelings about that.
It was all right
because I thought it was good, but I was hoping there's definitely going to be more because they have to, I think, expand upon it, what they did. But I was shocked at how short it was, and again, shocked at how long it was because it was so good. It was so good. I wanted more of it and then didn't realize that I had played maybe like two hours. And I was like, man, this seems really short. But then I was like, wow, it wasn't that short, but it was really good. Okay.
It's pretty dense.
It needs to be longer. Yeah. And so that's for a DLC, it was pretty, it's probably the best DLC I've ever played yet. So
I don't know. Well, if we're going back to like expansions, I don't know, some of those old school, like Shivering Isles for Oblivion was pretty good.
I'm not going to go back that far. I'm going back to when DLC was really a thing, which I think was in the last 2 years. Like people like
Most of the Borderlands stuff, the original Borderlands stuff was pretty good in terms of good DLC.
Yeah, I never played any of the original Borderlands DLC stuff. So
I'm just curious, when did the switch come from DLC to, or from expansion to DLC? Like, we've seen a few expansions resurface.
When both the amount of content and price on said packs dropped.
Well, I would say expansion is still used when you talk about MMOs, but I think
expansion, if you're talking about something like Dawn Guard, I would still call that an expansion. Like Dragonborn is an expansion in terms of Skyrim.
Yeah, I think it's just about the amount of content there.
Yeah.
Well, then I think, theoretically, based on that statement, then the BioShock Infinite DLC could be an expansion because it was really dense with things you can do.
No, that's DLC. It's not. There's not enough in there.
You don't think there's enough in there?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Sweet.
All right. Well, and that's really it for me. That's all I've really been playing-wise, so...
All right. I guess, Durin, what have you been playing?
Oh, shit. Okay.
Can't prepare today.
Well, okay. Like I haven't been on in a while, so I've tried to think about how far back am I willing to go.
Last we talked to you, you were probably still neck deep in Final Fantasy.
Okay, so I have a PS4 now?
I think it came out.
I think you were here for the PS4 launch and all that. Okay, but, I mean, okay.
We didn't have one.
There was something else I got for it, though, because I got the like $10 voucher thing that came with the PS4 for PSN, and then even though I bought Assassin's Creed like the week before they started their promotion, where if you spend like $60, they'll give you $10 in PSN credit, they still went ahead and gave it to me anyway, which is pretty awesome. So I had $20 of credit sitting there, and I really, even though I don't give a shit about Killzone, I wanted something on that console that was made for that console. So I bought Killzone, and I played some Killzone, and that is about as by the books a shooter as you could possibly ever play.
Killzone has always sort of been that, though.
See, like, I've never really played one. This is actually my first Killzone.
I've heard the single player is nothing to be like nothing to tattle about, but the multiplayer is pretty decent. Have you done any of that, or just the story?
Yeah. No, I've done a bit of both. So starting with the story, it is very much like I said, very by the books. The voice acting is absolutely fucking atrocious.
That's a staple of the Killzone series.
Specifically, the writing.
That's a feature.
It's about as generic as it can get. But like, you know, the game is still, I mean, it is a solid game. Like the game isn't just it's bad. It's just, there's nothing special about it. As for the multiplayer, it's good as long as you are not playing Team Deathmatch, which is what everybody plays. And then the reason I say that, like, Team Deathmatch is bad because the spawns in that game are generally pretty terrible. I don't know how many times I would spawn in gunfire. Which some of that is, you know, down to, because like you can have player drop spawn points. So it's just, you know, somebody decided to drop it in a really bad place. And it's also my own fault, because when you, I believe when you choose one of the spawn points, or you're like looking at which one you want to choose to spawn at, I think you get like a preview of what's going on there, I think.
But still, like I'd say that's probably the issue of level design then, whether it's designing where you want players to spawn at or what, like, both from a developer making hard spawn points, and then you'd want to design parts of the map which are safer than other areas, I guess, right?
And yeah, but like that's not even the biggest issue. The biggest issue I have with the multiplayer, specifically in Team Deathmatch, and why I would recommend anybody that plays that game online avoid that mode. Is it has incredibly terrible level design, like the worst I've ever seen in competitive multiplayer, where pretty much every match I've played has devolved into one team being around one corner of a narrow hallway and the other team being around the other corner of the narrow hallway and just kind of taking turns, taking pot shots at each other while continuing to constantly drop shields down so that the opponent can't shoot you. As well as just a ridiculous amount of spawn camping.
Awesome. It's incredibly
easy to spawn camp in that game. But neither of those, oddly enough, are experiences I had in the objective-based multiplayer, which is really solid.
But no one plays it.
Not nearly as many, no. I mean, it's kind of like Call of Duty in that regard. Like, it's there. There are people playing it. But the vast majority of players are just queuing up in Team Deathmatch.
That's unfortunate.
There also doesn't appear to be any cosmetic customization to your character, which is really, really unfortunate.
I have that game. I'm waiting for Christmas to play it, but I don't think I'm going to touch the multiplayer.
The multiplayer is actually, if you're not going to touch the multiplayer, you might as well just not even play that game. The single player is...
I'm curious. I'm going to be real here.
Can be
the
real?
Reason I'm going to play that game is so I can tell Cynic does not look as good as he thinks it does.
That game looks really good.
I don't doubt it looks really good. I doubt it looks better than some of the stuff I've seen on this here PC.
Oh, no, absolutely not. No, not even fucking close.
Exactly. You and I know that.
Battlefield 3 looks better than Killzone.
Boom.
I mean, let's be real here.
Yeah. I mean, like, graphically, how much has changed? I'd say, like, the water is probably the biggest change from 3 to 4, right?
In Battlefield?
Yeah.
I haven't actually personally played Battlefield, so I can't really say for sure.
I think Shinboy played some of the beta, right?
I played, like, two matches, and went, like, this is kind of buggy.
Oh, yeah, okay. I played about as much as Shinboy.
Okay, I still don't know if you're talking about the beta or the release.
Wait, that game's out?
Apparently, though it's still really buggy.
Thought that was still in beta.
So if it's still buggy, it's still in beta, right?
Yeah.
You don't release a product that's not buggy.
No. It's an open beta, but you have to buy access for it.
Oh, it's early access.
It's EA's first early access game.
Yeah.
They already have DLC for it. All right. What else after Killzone have you been playing?
So talking about that, I had forgotten that I had downloaded... Rayman Legend? Origin, the first one.
You probably got it on some Steam sale.
On my Vita. No, I got it on my Vita back when it was on PlayStation Plus, and then just kind of forgot about it until recently. So I've been playing a little bit of that. That game is fucking great.
Yep.
God damn, that game is great. Yep.
It is.
Oh, shit. Aside
video
from
games.
Aside from that, I've been playing a little bit of WoW again.
Oh, boring. Boring as in everyone knows WoW. It's a known quantity.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I'm mostly just leveling a character to have it ready for the next expansion.
Have they announced what that is? I know they said something, like name and everything.
Oh, yeah. Like name. It's a new level cap. They're going to finally introduce new player models.
Yes. Okay. I remember hearing about during
yeah, like
garrisons, which are like their take on player housing.
Durin spent like about a half hour, maybe it might have been like 45 minutes, trying to explain to me the lore of like trying to make sense of this new expansion, and I still couldn't wrap my head around it.
Oh man! So they're doing enough.
No,
they're doing time travel, but they're not calling it time travel.
Yeah.
Wait, what? All right, can you give me like a short paragraph explaining how it is, or do you need to have like a?
No, I can just tell you what they're doing. I'm not going to try to explain the logistics of it.
Just go along with whatever Blizzard says.
So basically, the head guy behind the Horde like got thrown off the Horde at the end of this current expansion. He goes through the Dark Portal, or like alters the Dark Portal, and goes back in time to before the orcs became corrupted or whatever, like changed by drinking some blood. And he then starts what he's calling the Iron Horde, which is his own horde, that he then like goes and alters their Dark Portal to come back to current time and try and take over Azeroth with his new Iron Horde.
That sounds ridiculous.
So basically what this expansion is the first expansion, Outland, except
it's before it became Outland.
Yeah, before it became Outland. So you're fighting the orcs from 30 years ago. Who have aged 30 years.
So you're on, you're going back to Draenor, which was the orc homeworld originally.
Oh, geez. You know what I just realized? What if, this is really stupid for this podcast, but what if Thrall's parents were still, like, if Hellscream never killed him, then there's two Thralls now. How's that Thrall's for time travel?
Thrall's family will be there. I believe his dad, I think, is there, but his mom's already killed. I think there's potential for two Thralls in that case.
I had no idea.
I might be thinking of Garrosh. I think I'm thinking of a Garrosh's family in that instance. Thrall will have some kind of family there, but I'm not sure exactly. They did say that it would not take place in a time, or it seemed like there was not going to be a way where somebody was going to see themselves.
Yeah, they're definitely throwing continuity out the door with this.
Who needs continuity? So,
they threw continuity out the fucking door when they made Draenei.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
Because Metzen forgot that they were not originally Draenei.
Anything else you've been playing during?
You know, probably a few other things on Steam, but I'm not recalling them at this moment. I played some of the free to play stuff on PS4. That stuff's pretty. Oh, Resogun. I played a lot
Resogun.
Of Resogun. A lot of Resogun.
Resogun's pretty great.
Resogun's probably one of the best games of this year.
Probably.
Now, like, is it one of the best games of the year? Correct me if I'm wrong, but that's like the side scrolling. Almost like old arcadey shooter of like you're in a plane and you're shooting stuff, but it's a 3D cylinder, right?
Yes. You're going around the outside of a cylinder.
Are you underwater?
Also, I would call it a plane, but sure. No, you're not underwater. No, you're not.
You're in space, as far as I'm concerned.
That game, physics, man. I love beating a level.
Do you think that is like? That seems to be like a grasping the community, and from what footage I've seen of it, is like a PlayStation version of Geometry Wars. Like not in terms of like game mechanics or anything, but in terms of like it's gripping people the same way, and it's like this indie indie-ish game that is just like here's what we can do with this engine, throwing stuff at you. Really.
What's that?
Housemarque. Yeah. I would not call them an indie studio.
Okay, well it's. Who made Geometry Wars an indie game?
I believe they are a Sony studio, right?
I mean, like, they call themselves an independent game developer from Finland. Like, that is their tag. But I don't know. Yeah, they put out some. They've been putting out games for a long time.
Yeah. But the only other thing I want to mention of note that I've been playing some of was pre-last character wipe. I was playing a lot of Starbound.
Okay.
I haven't touched it since the character wipe, but man, as somebody who never really got into Terraria, for whatever reason, like, Starbound is so good.
That seems like a game that I want absolutely zero to do with.
To anybody who's been hiding under a rock since this game has been announced and come out, what is Starbound?
It's Terraria in space.
Okay.
Half of that sounds okay.
I mean, it's basically, a lot of the gameplay is very much taken from Terraria. Which I realize I keep saying two different ways. Anyway.
Well, my thing is it's not, it's more Minecraft than Terraria, right? Because no. there's since it's still early access, or is still alpha, I guess, there's not a lot of combat. There's not, like, different stages of, with Terraria, there was, you get to the twilight, well, you go to hell. Right,
But I mean, at the same time, like, Terraria was playable in this state at 1.2, and it was the same thing.
Yeah.
So it is still Terraria. It's just not fully fleshed out yet. But, like, I know Jeff has kind of bemoaned the space travel as being something that, like, takes away from the experience because you don't have the experience of building and all that.
I think what would be cool is if you could build an outfit and modify your ship.
I know you can get a bigger ship at some point. I'm not sure about actually like modifying.
Cause I think like that would be a good thing to promote the ownership of it. But
yeah, like that would be really cool if you could actually like if your ship kind of became modular and you can kind of add and remove functions of your ships. Kind of, I would like for it to eventually my ship to be something akin to an FTL ship where I can actually have like this is my engine room. This is my, you know, whatever room like that. That would be really cool. Whereas right now it's just kind of one long hallway. But no, that, like, it's not as bad as Jeff would make it out to be because while yes, there is space travel, you don't necessarily spend all of your time on one planet. Like you do always have a home planet that you can set. So you can always still go back to that planet, no matter where you've gone. Like a friend of mine and I were playing it and we basically just threw a bunch of coal into my ship and hit the button to go to some random place way, way far away. Ended up on like an icy planet that was actually, as we dug through the ice, turned out it was made of flesh.
You know what I just realized would be awesome for this game is if
they put it in first person and called it No Man's Sky.
Well, no, okay. That would be cool, but for this game, what if you had, like, what if they combined FTL with Starbound, where, like, when you travel from planet to planet, like, that whole aspect, when you're in space, is FTL, and there's the chance of combat in space, and then to do, like, major repairs and whatnot, you visit a planet, and you drop down, and it's Terraria.
I don't know. This sounds like too much going on.
I don't know, like, I'm actually okay with the way it was, because, like, when we landed on that planet, we didn't really think things through. We didn't bring enough fuel to go back. So we were, like, stranded on this icy planet that was actively trying to kill us because it was so cold.
Wait. Spoilers to a game earlier this year, but were you on Dead Space?
Were you on Dead Space 3?
2D Dead Space?
So basically, we like, had to dig through this planet and, like, try and survive with the limited amount of materials we brought with us because we did not plan accordingly in order to just like mine enough coal just to get back home.
Yeah. I mean like this game looks interesting with like what they're trying to do and improve Terraria, but really just assuming No Man's Sky gets out anytime this.
Oh yeah.
Next year.
I have yet to watch the trailer for that.
Oh, that game seems great.
If that game even comes close to matching its ambition, Starbound is going to be yesterday's news.
Well, apparently, just talk briefly on No Man's Sky, and then we'll go to what else you've been playing. There was I think it was Idle Thumbs podcast. I listened to way too many podcasts, but they're talking about a game company that has been working on something similar to No Man's Sky for like 10 years.
Let me find
And well, I guess Durin's looking that up. The one thing is, with the trailer for No Man's Sky, they talk about how you'll be able to start on the planet and then fly, like, just look out at a star and fly towards it. But they cut away from when you're leaving the planet to when you're out of the atmosphere in space. And apparently the guys who spent the decade or so working on this other game, very similar to No Man's Sky, was like, yeah, we know why they did that. That's super hard to do,
yeah,
like, for programming. So
you just sort of, you make every atmosphere, like, way, I guess, thinner or shorter than it in theory should be. Because otherwise you're just modeling all the stuff that just doesn't need to be there from a gameplay perspective, and it's just super taxing.
Yeah. Have any games done clouds really well?
Assassin's Creed 4. Actually, it does. It does the volumetric stuff pretty well.
Especially that new patch they put in on the PC version.
Oh, the PhysX clouds?
Oh my god, it looks so good.
All right, well, tell me about PhysX clouds with Assassin's Creed Black Flag.
You're welcome for that segue, Thurb.
Yes.
real quickly, the other one we were talking about was called Project Infinity.
Okay. Well, no, it is called it looks Project. Like,
well, right? I say was because it looks like that is no longer their main focus. They are actually just, like, straight up trying to build up the engine now.
And then just sell it to the people making...
Probably, yeah.
Well, it's about time.
Kickstarter. What?
We do need a new engine out there. We need something.
Well, I mean, UE4 is coming out at some point.
Yeah, I mean, like, Unreal is getting...
For games are still using the Havoc engine. We need something new. Like, I need
it's
new
just for physics, though.
Well, I mean, okay, if you talk about games like needing new engines, Titanfall is using the old Source engine, right?
Yeah.
And that game looks amazing.
Looks all right.
Well, okay, yeah. Looks all right. But anyway,
debuted in 2004.
Yeah, we were talking about Black Flag.
The blackest of flags.
Yes.
That's a pretty good game, you guys.
Yeah.
Tell me about a game with pirates that isn't steampunk.
Sid Meier's Pirates. Let me tell you.
Oh, that's
good. Well, gee, Sid Meier's Pirates.
I beat Assassin's Creed Black Flag.
I did not, but I played... I'm in Sequence 4, I think. So I'm still pretty early.
Durin, have you beat Black Flag yet? I know you've been playing it.
I have not beat it yet either.
I think you had some beef with Jeff. Or no, it was with Vinny.
Why did you have this said beef?
It was with Vinny's opinion of nothing being useful in the real world, quote unquote.
Oh, none of that stuff exists in my place.
Oh, yeah. Well, basically, like Vinny saying that, like, there was nothing that referenced anything in the prior games in the real world portion of the game, and given where he said he was at, I knew that he was past where I was, and I don't want to give out any spoilers, but there are very, very direct, about as direct references as you can get to the happenings of the previous game.
I mean, there are, like, some employees have, like, statues of the other playable characters. That's about
I'm even beyond that. I can message you. I don't want to talk about it on here in case people don't want spoilers. But you don't even really have to seek it out. It's actually, like, stuff that is kind of required to do.
One of the things I was wishing for was more of, like, I played a lot. I played probably of the 53 hours that I played. Is it 53 or 20? Well, let me load it up here real quick just to make sure. Many hours that I played, I wish that there would have been more outside of the Animus stuff, because I started getting a little tiresome of the in-game, and I wanted more of the out-game, if that makes any sense. If you're playing it, it makes more sense to you. So...
I think after, like, the pushback, like, I think it's, I don't want to put words in the developers' mouths, but maybe they just didn't know what to do other than make missions, which is what they got a bunch of bad feedback from Assassin's Creed 3 over, like, with just, now you have to do this pointless mission from, you know, being a awesome American Revolution Indian person to... Oh, you're now in Venezuela running from guards who work for Abstergo. And people, I guess, weren't too keen to do that. They wanted... That's not what they wanted in their Assassin's Creed.
Right, but they were doing such a good job with the way that they were approaching the outside of Animus. on this one.
You're all wrong. All that shit is stupid.
That I think they could have embellished more on it.
I think all that shit is stupid, and I'm starting to get the feeling that Ubisoft thinks all that shit is stupid, seeing as they put out a survey asking people, hey, do you think this game would be better if it was not an Assassin's Creed game and was just a pirate game?
I could have said that right away. I might have been actually spending currency on this game then.
Well, if it was true. Just a pirate game. If the game was strictly pirate-based and there was no out-of-the-animus play, then I would say, yes, it's a great game and I love it. But they led me along with a chain, and I got intrigued in the outside of the animus stuff to a point where I would like more of it the way they were doing it.
The way I am playing Assassin's Creed 4 is that I'm treating it sort of like a TV series where each sequence is like an episode.
Okay.
Or, you know, a little section of an episode. And all of the out of animus stuff are all of the stupid ads that I'm just not going to pay attention to at all and pretend they aren't there.
See, I thought you were going the direction that I've been playing, which is every sequence is, you know, an episode. And then after that episode, I pop out of the animus to see if anything's changed.
No. I treat it like an episode, and then usually when I play Assassin's Creed 4, what I do beforehand is I find an article that I've been meaning to read, and because it doesn't do it that often, on the rare occasion that it pulls you out of the animus, mm-hmm. I just sort of pay as little attention as I need to, just sort of like walking forward as little as I need to while just reading the article. Because that shit is dumb. Doesn't need to be there.
Well, I will say that I didn't – of the stuff that you can do to – let's see. How do I not do this to be spoilers? I guess not being spoilers, the little tag stuff that you would collect, the little QR codes that you see you mm-hmm. can pick up.
Oh, yeah.
I don't care to read any of that. That meant absolutely – to me, it was the dialogue outside that intrigued me. So I will not say that I enjoyed the, you know, your own research time type stuff. That wasn't my thing, but I did like the play of the story outside.
No, because like I was talking to someone, and I was like, "Yeah, I'm not paying attention to all that at all." And they were just like, "Man, you're going to be really confused at the end." I'm like, "I don't care at all."
Yeah, because you just want your pirate game.
I just want my pirate game exactly. I want my open world pirate game.
I believe we've talked about this on a previous podcast, but just like the one issue I had with the game was what everyone loved about it, which I think still looks really amazing, was like, you know, actually fighting a ship and boarding it happens a bit too often, right?
It happens as often as you want it to happen.
Yeah.
How often is it presentable to you? Like, hey, here's a ship you could attack.
Well, there are ships everywhere.
Oh, yeah, there are ships everywhere. But you can also just completely, like,
you just sort of sail past them and not do anything. They won't automatically attack you unless you're like in hostile waters.
That would be like playing GTA and just every person you run into, you feel like you need to kill them.
Yeah, I do that.
Do you think this is like a to Darksiders being the grown up Zelda of like Ocarina of Time? Is this more like a grown up Wind Waker?
I don't know because I couldn't stand Wind Waker. So
I don't know. Actually, that's an interesting comparison.
I would say no, because Wind Waker didn't really have a lot going on in its world.
Yeah.
Well, it didn't have a cannon.
Well, it's not like you could go around and, like, you know, take this camp from this group of bad guys and then go around and collect all these treasure chests and get all these other silly collectibles and everything. And hunt all these animals and stuff like that.
Yeah. Like, the only real direct comparison between the two is you got a boat.
So I guess that's the one thing that didn't really intrigue me was that I'm not big on side quest stuff. I don't like collectibles and side quests and doing this, that type of stuff. Like, that's a break into Shin stuff, but I know you've been playing Far Cry 3 recently.
I played Blood Dragon more.
Okay.
So technically, well, it's basically Far Cry 3.
Right. But the whole going around and killing something and skinning it so that I can craft something to make – I don't like that. For those like if I'm playing an MMO, yes, that's what I'm expecting. If I'm playing a single player game, I don't want to do that. I like to. I want to hear what the story is. The developer is trying.
Like the thing is, a lot of this stuff doesn't matter.
Well,
like the
true.
Skinning stuff, like it's really there's really not much consequence to it. The only collectibles though that I think are fantastically done are those sea shanties.
Shanties are awesome.
Yes. Oh, they're so good.
Oh yeah, those are good.
And I didn't realize you could keep them singing by because I didn't realize once I accidentally hit like four on my keyboard and I was like, wait, I can mute them and they can keep singing if they stop. And I kept making
you, like,
them sing.
Yelled at them to stop singing.
No, I yelled at them to keep singing. When they stopped, I was like, no, oh, keep singing, go. So I thought that was pretty awesome.
I like that. I liked chasing them around is fun.
Yeah.
And the fact that when you actually get them, your crew learns the song is pretty pretty great.
You know, it's funny because I feel like they are a great evolution of the couriers, but then they left the couriers in the game.
I don't know what the couriers are. Keep in mind, this is my first Assassin's Creed game.
Because couriers, like, you'll be running along, and then like suddenly you'll see a dude running that's like red on your screen, and like he's like,
oh yes, okay.
The others, and you chase him down, and you get like money or whatever, and that's it.
Yeah.
Like this was kind of a cool, like it's similar enough because it's just kind of, you know, using the environment to quickly catch whatever the thing is, except in this case you get an actual reward. But then, like, then they just went ahead and left couriers in for some odd reason.
I would love just
anything out of those games.
I would love just an album of all of the sea shanties sung. I would totally pay money for that.
So that game is a buggy mess, but has some of the most hilarious bugs I've seen in a long time.
That, yes, that too. That is
like
awesome.
Everyone ascending to the sky. God, so what? Good. If you have not seen that,
I had.
I guess that'll be one of our plugs for the end of the show.
Yeah. I need to find the video again, but it's the ship had like sunk, like the water around it, I guess it sort of sunk way down and it was sort of raising everyone back up. But I think what happened was the crew had stayed on the same level. So when the ship got raised by the engine, it raised the crew as well. So it was like they were just ascending into heaven. It was amazing.
All right, so I guess before we move to Shinboy officially, Durin, is there anything else you've been playing or anything else you've been up to?
Not that
I want to leave any good game with pirates, but we got a lot of other games to talk about, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's pretty much what I've been playing.
All right, Shinboy, what's new with pirates?
I've been playing some pirate games. I have several hundred Uplay friends. Like, I have so many Uplay friends, you guys.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
Because there was a giant bomb thread that was like, hey man, I have Assassin's Creed 4 on the PC. Who wants to be my Uplay friend so we can do like their social tie-ins, which I think is just like ships that have more materials and money on them. I don't really know that you can take. But like, I was the third person to respond in that thread, so I'm at the top of the first page, and now I have several hundred Uplay friends.
No, actually,
know what's going on.
Is there like a ship-based multiplayer, or is it just the traditional Assassin's Creed multiplayer?
No.
What I mean by the tie-in stuff is that like you have your spyglass, which you know lets you spot ships and look at them. If you see, I think they're called like Royal Convoy or like Royal something or other that have more materials. Because when you board a ship and like take it over, you get some loot, like some materials that you can either sell or use for upgrades and stuff like that. And these have more of them. And I'm pretty sure when you spot them, it shares their location with like people on your friends list or something like that. So that's how people were doing it. You can also use it because I think it was in Brotherhood, the assassin thing where you could send out assassins on missions.
Yes.
Yes.
They have that in this game, but with a fleet. You can send ships out on missions.
Yeah, I haven't seen much of a use for that, really.
Is it just resources? You get money and resources, but like... Okay. People on your friends list can assist your missions and vice versa. Like, they can either speed it up or send, like, reinforcements to protect the ship and stuff like that. There is some friends list integration there. God, I'm double-clicking to get listen to all this clicking for more Uplay friends. Just so many. Add me on Uplay, you guys. What's my Uplay name? Hold on. My Uplay name is Shinboy. Add me on Uplay, all of you. I need more Uplay friends. Okay, anyway. So, yeah, there is some integration that... And speaking of Uplay, I put more Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon.
Sweet. I picked up Far Cry 3 during the Steam sale. So
I just picked it up as well. I haven't actually installed it yet.
Nice.
But I played Blood Dragon earlier in the year when it came out. So I figured I would go back, it being end of the year stuff and it being a while since I had played it, sort of go back and there's all the garrisons and stuff you can take and do some of that stuff. And that game still has the best stealth in any game I've played.
Yep.
Non-stealth game has made the best stealth. Stealth games, what are you doing?
Thank you. Where were you, Shin, when we were debating that on the show?
I mean, it's not a stealth game, but it has good stealth.
Yeah, totally. It has probably some of the best stealth.
So I guess I'm the only one that liked Dishonored stealth functionality.
I didn't hate it.
I mean,
it's just Far Cry did it better.
Yeah, yeah. I guess it did.
Because it didn't rely on dumb tropes in order to solve bad stealth gameplay.
Yep.
Like, oh, well, you know, it's kind of a pain to maneuver through our level design, so you can just teleport?
Wait, hold on. Sure. I was saying this quite literally a year ago, and now you're agreeing with me?
No. That is not what I disagree with you on with that game. I think it's a fantastic game. I disagree with you on you calling the game out as trash because you can't play exactly the way you want and have it be...
fun?
As rewarding.
Have it be fun?
Also, I do personally take into consideration the fact that this is the first game by that development studio, and it's a hell of a game.
Yeah, that's why, going back to what Squiddle was saying about Burial at Sea and it being kind of short and it being sort of, like, okay, especially compared to, like, the main game, that's the first time Irrational has done DLC, story DLC, as a studio. So I gave them a bit of a pass. Some of that stuff. Yeah, Far Cry's pretty good. Like, because stealth is the best way to play that game.
Yep.
Far Cry 3 and Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon.
When you say stealth, you mean stealth and bow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, like, the way they handle letting you know if you're seen is just so simple and genius. It's just a little bar that fills up, pointing to the direction where the enemy is that is seeing you. That's all it is.
Yeah.
But I don't know why more people don't use a system like that, because it's, like I said, it's so simple. It works so well.
Actually, Payday uses something very similar. It's not an arrow point to where you're at, but imagine like a circle where, like, you know, the two parts of it are moving up from either side, and as it gets closer to the top...
Yeah, it's not really an arrow. It's like you have the circle like around the middle of the screen, and it's like a semicircle that is gray and gradually fills up with white as your visibility, or, like, you know, the longer the enemy sees you.
Yeah.
And the arrow all it does is point to the direction, similar to how in most shooters, when you get shot, it points to where the shot came from.
Yeah,
it works really well done.
Also, the game like offers you like a good... There's always a good hiding spot 5 feet away.
Yeah, especially with the way it works with like the high grass and stuff.
Yeah, like the high grass, the you know, hills everywhere, the trees. Like, there's always something you can duck behind.
Especially in Blood Dragon, you're so fucking fast that you can just like run away and like power slide behind something.
Oh man, I need to load that up. A friend of mine bought that for me, and I haven't had a chance to load it up yet.
If you don't like the tutorial, because some people sort of didn't, because it outstays its welcome a bit with its jokes. Like, it sort of makes a point of you throwing D20s at people. How nerds or something, I don't really know. If you can get past that and get into the rest of the main story, it's really fun in a campy 80s action movie type way.
Yeah, that's the part I'm looking forward to.
Oh god, the ending is so good. Oh god. Anyway, everyone should go play that game because it's only $15 and you can still probably get, if you do all the side stuff, probably a solid 6 to 8 hours out of it.
Wow.
There's a good amount there. So yeah.
Sweet.
What else have I been playing? More G-dubs, as always.
Nice.
I've sort of been down on World of Worlds since the season ended. I'm waiting for that next season to start. Mostly because now I'm back at the point where it's like, well, we're just facing the same servers every week. These guys are all assholes. I don't feel like facing them. Because we can't sort of beat them down into third place anymore. SBI, you suck. Trying to think what else I've been playing. I bought some stuff.
Okay.
That I haven't played yet. I bought Gone Home. I'm gonna play that this week. I bought.
Now, what was your on the subject of interactive narrative experiences? What did you think of Dear Esther and Stanley Parable?
I like the Stanley Parable. I love the Stanley Parable. I didn't play Dear Esther because I thought it looked really boring.
Okay, so it's not because it wasn't. I could have sworn you didn't like that because it wasn't a game. Like, you were of the opinion it wasn't a game.
No. I mean, the Stanley Parable is kind of on that borderline, and I love the Stanley Parable. It might be on my top 10 of the year. Tune in next week to find out.
I know it made Total Biscuits top 10 of the year, which...
Yeah, it's really good.
He was very outspoken about Dear Esther not being a game.
Well, the thing is with the Stanley Parable compared to Dear Esther, there are things you can poke and prod at in Dear Esther. Or not Dear Esther, Stanley Parable, excuse me. And, like, the game will throw a reaction at you.
Okay.
Ways so, that I don't think are present in Dear Esther.
So it's that level of interactability?
Yeah, like, that personally doesn't sway my opinion of it, but I could see how it might sway someone else's.
So, like, what interests you about Gone Home, or just because everyone seems to rate it so highly, or...?
Everyone seems to rate it so highly. I'm kind of curious how it, I guess, holds up is a weird term, but holds up knowing the quote-unquote twist of that game, or at least the larger reveal, because it's been all over the place and has been the center point of a lot of discussion about that game.
That is, it is in fact a first-person shooter?
Yes, yes, that it's actually made by Infinity Ward.
You are a Ghostbuster. The house is filled with ghosts in every single room.
Yeah, I'm going to mess with that. That's the only thing. My top 10 is set in stone except for that. That's the only thing left that could shift it around. Because I'm not going to, as much as I like Assassin's Creed, and it would be on my list, but I simply haven't played enough of it.
Sweet.
What else did I buy? I bought Alice Madness Returns. Is that Madness Returns? Is that the subtitle?
Yeah.
Because that game always looked interesting to me.
American McGee, I think, in the day.
It's the sequel to American McGee's Alice, but I'm pretty sure that he actually still worked on it.
Sweet.
I also, unrelated or somewhat related, I didn't realize that American McGee is actually his name.
Yeah.
It's not a handle.
I think, didn't he work on Doom or Quake or something?
I don't know.
He's part of the id crew?
I just thought American McGee was like a handle. I didn't realize that his first name was actually American.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he was part of the early id crew, yes.
Okay. Yeah, I love the Alice series. Absolutely love it.
Because that take on Alice has always been really interesting to me. I love dark and twisted things.
Nice.
That is the definition of... and other than that, I've been playing the game of studying for exams, which is not as fun.
No, but I'm sure the end game of that is probably pretty rewarding.
Sometimes not.
I mean, either way, it's rewarding because then it's done.
Yeah.
Not in all cases. And when it's like, oh, well, I'll have to take this again.
Oh, well, yeah, I guess
that's you're not done. I'm trying to think. Looking at my Steam list, I don't see much else. I've been playing a ton of FIFA on PS4. So I was going to do a, like, you can do, you know, your make a player, like, in every sports game. But they didn't have my last name in the list of names that the announcers could say. So I was looking through that list just to find something interesting. And
that
I found
actually that is kind of weird because both, like, your names are not uncommon.
Yeah. But anyway.
Yeah.
Or usually they have something that's close, but I didn't even see anything. I was looking through the list of names, and I saw that they could say Fabio. So now, Fabio, he was originally signed with the Portland Timbers, you know, 6'3 Italian striker that Fabio is with his flowing hair. But now he's on loan with some Italian team. I don't really know which one. I'm just sort of playing. I'm really upset, though, because... they didn't have a really long hair option. I need to unlock it.
Oh, so there is one that it's just not by default?
I think you can't see the ones that you haven't unlocked. So I unlocked some more, I think what they were calling medium hairstyles the other day. I need to get in there and look at it.
Mm.
But apparently in soccer, 6'3",
Fabio must be realized.
6'4", whatever, means you're like a giant because he just jumps over everyone. It's pretty funny. Fabio, goal-scoring machine. It's really funny because it's always weird because I'm sort of, you know, if I'm playing when I was still on the Portland Timbers, I know a good amount of the players on that team and in the MLS in general. So you're hearing all these names that you're used to hearing when, like, watching a broadcast or whatever. Then you just hear the announcer. It's like, oh, the ball to Fabio. It's like, wait, what? It's pretty funny. I've been doing a lot of that. Yeah, that's about it. I was thinking of playing some other stuff. to get at before Game of the Year, like DMC, and there was one other one that I don't remember. But they haven't been on daily yet on Steam, so I've yet to pick them up.
I'd be really surprised if DMC does not go on a daily.
It's still $25. I don't know what the hell is up with that. There was one other, I don't remember what the hell it was.
It's a game that came out this year. $25 is not bad.
Yeah, but come on now.
we're too used to Steam pricing.
Yeah.
Like, for $25 can buy you five games.
Sleeping Dogs is
$5. Well, yeah, but Sleeping Dogs is $5 at a daily deal, to be fair.
Yeah, I guess. That's what I mean. BioShock Infinite is part of a triple pack that costs $20. It's the first two games.
True. BioShock Infinite came out this year, too.
That's what I mean. Yeah. It came out around
It was on sale by itself day one for $10.
That's what I mean. So it came out this year. There's no excuse.
Or like $7.49 or some ridiculous
amount. Because DMC came out back in January.
So did BioShock.
I think BioShock like came February. Out in March. Yeah,
February, March.
No, DMC was January 24th. I had the Steam page open. And BioShock was March.
Well, clearly this means that DMC is a better game.
Clearly.
I picked up Tomb Raider when that came out in March in May for like $12.50. That's a fantastic game. You might also see that on my top 10 list for this year. Tune in next week to find out.
Spoilers, Shin. We're going to have no content for next week's show. It's
just
gonna be
what if I just
remember like, when I said this? Yeah, that happened.
So they're
when I said that?
Put them out of the list just so they're not on the podcast.
Yeah. All right. Well, Thurb, what about you? What have you...
Yeah.
Games you play? Well, in terms of stuff I've been playing previously and still been playing, still doing Spelunky. I've been a bit of Guild Wars 2, but not too much. I mean, it's just like, the Wubwub scene is kind of not inactive, just not in, like, the drive of the season, the league, isn't there right now. So it's just like, I don't know what to do.
Reason to want to play it.
Yeah.
No incentive.
But, I mean, it's Winter's Day is cool. Been playing Black Mesa, the mod I've talked on previous episodes about. That game looks amazing. I kind of want to go back and play Half-Life Source, like Half-Life Original, to see if this is the same way. But I love that. Yes, it's a linear experience, but the point between like your linear path and where they stop modeling the level is so much larger than in other games. Like it just feels like you're actually walking through a large complex because you can see into these other rooms that you can't actually access, or even if you can't access, there's no reason to be in there. But it just it builds the world so much more. And I could have sworn Half-Life 1 was like that too, or as well.
I don't know. I've never played it. Duren, you gave me a copy of Half-Life, and I still haven't played it.
Did I?
I remember I woke up one morning and I had a gift. It was a gift, and you were just like, how do you not own this game? And I was like, what?
Oh, right, yeah. Okay. I don't even know where I own that game. The fucking copy of it.
I don't know, man.
It's just, it's that it just shows up in your inventory sometimes.
Yeah.
But yeah, I did a little bit more of the Banner Saga. I just wanted to do something strategic.
Is the single player for that out yet?
No, that comes out next month. And sort of just like, I played it because, like, man, this thing's coming out soon. The only thing close to this is the free-to-play version of this.
Yeah, because I've heard mixed to negative things about that multiplayer stuff, the factions part of it.
I actually kind of enjoyed it. I mean, like, it is a solid free-to-play base. Like, they are making almost no money off it, just enough to keep the servers going and maybe pay for an occasional pizza. So they won't screw you that way. And the... There's no rating system, as far as I can tell, only because there's not enough people playing it, but there is a level base. So if you were to fight somebody who's played it for like months nonstop, they will know more than you, but they won't be able to use their superpowered, super experienced units. They have to use units that are of the same grade as you. So it's sort of like the XCOM point system.
Yeah, because like... When I saw that, I was like, okay, we got some ex-BioWare dudes making a game that they want to make in the vein of something like FF Tactics, and the music is being done by the dude who did the music for Journey. Like, sign me up.
Yeah. And then, like, it's the mechanic for it is like something incredibly interesting.
I heard about this. I saw your giant bomb thread about this.
Oh, okay.
About how, what is it? Like your max HP is also tied to the max damage you can do, something along those lines.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, there's two stat values. There is your, like, the blue bar, which is your armor, which will help mitigate damage coming to you. But then also the red bar is your health. But let's say, like, you have 10 health. Like, that's 10 out of 10. You can do 6 damage to somebody, for example. Like, that's that rating. But then if you take even one tick of damage, that goes from a 6 to, like, a 3. And then as it gets progressively, if you get down to, like, 1 or 2 health, you'll only be able to do 1 or 2 damage.
Okay, now how do you prevent this? Is there, like, a lot of healing?
I think in the single player, there will be an option to heal, but as of right now, there's no healing. It's just because
it seems like then this would just sort of make battles go on forever as everyone is gradually getting whittled down.
Yeah. What you can do is if you have, like, position certain units in certain areas will help boost their defenses, but really it's just like, as soon as people start getting killed, they're going to, it's make the most of that unit before he gets focused down, at least in the factions version, which is the free to play. Yeah, I imagine that'll be different in the campaign.
Yeah, that makes it interesting because that means that, like, the concept of a glass cannon doesn't really exist.
I mean, there are
not in the traditional sense.
There are glass cannons. Those are the archers. But the issue is the distance it takes for the archer to hit somebody is, I'm pretty sure, the same distance it takes that guy to walk up and hit you. And the archers are, like, they're very easy to get one-shotted for not a lot of damage traded off, I think.
Okay, so is it they have? Well, they would have high HP so they can do high damage, but they have really low armor?
They have low armor, and when you make upgrades to the units, You can play around with their stat values. You can make it so they have a ton of armor or do a ton of damage. But there's ceilings for each of them that vary. So, like, the melee units will traditionally have more health than, like, you might be able to buff a archer's health to be as high as a melee guy's default health.
Okay.
And that, like, that's the humans. When it comes to the giants, they have more health than anybody.
Seems interesting. It seems like you could toy with these systems a lot.
Yeah. And, like, that's what the Banner Saga, like, that's what the free-to-play version is they just put this out so people could toy with it, and they're just collecting all this data that will help them build the first arc of the story. And then when it comes to, like, starting to work on the second arc, they'll probably do another Kickstarter for that or something, but then they'll update the free-to-play version of it to let them collect more data, I guess.
Yeah, because what was I going to say? I saw it at PAX very briefly. I didn't really have a lot of time because I think they were near the Cards Against Humanity people.
The weirdest thing with this game is when I did go to see it, I saw it in Austin, Texas first and then at PAX Prime. But, like, actually talking to some of the people who helped make the game, you see them in the game. Like, it's,
they just had themselves drawn?
Well, yeah, it's like, it's because it's just three guys making it, like, they use their neighbors and their friends and their wife, like, one of their, it's like either the lady was a wife or, like, a friend of one of the creators, and she's an archer in the game.
What you're saying is I could go talk to these guys and give them a photo of me and they could turn me into a mighty Viking.
Maybe. I mean, if the art guy's there, you might be able to get a commission from him.
Maybe. We'll see at PAX East.
Yeah.
That'd be interesting. What else have you been playing, Thurb?
I also picked up Electronic Super Joy.
What is that? I've never heard of such things.
That is, it's another platformer, which was, I think, the first platformer in a long list, well, a pretty decent list, where I didn't actually intend to buy the platformer, but just buy the soundtrack.
Okay.
Because, like,
did you get a copy of the game that came with it and just ended up with the game as a side?
No, it was, I ended up buying the game when it was 79 cents on Steam.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, well, I got nothing else to play until, like, this and this come out, so I guess I'll start playing this for a little bit. And I've actually knocked out about 2 hours of it. It's pretty fun.
But now, like, this being an indie platformer, what's the twist? Because they all have one.
There's several little twists, and there are some comedic bits to it, but I was only able to pick up on some of the first world, I guess, of story bits, because the rest of it is just I'm having to focus on the game. It almost seems like this was like some of the jokes are meant for the people spectating, either on YouTube or on like friends next to you, sort of thing. Because I can't really read any of it. I'm too focused on timing my jumps right. But yeah, it has a stomp mechanic, which is just like instantly drop down, and they use that to fight the various guys that you're running past. I mean, it's an indie platformer in the most literal sense. It's not storied at all.
There's no real bells and whistles.
No, but there's a ton of little neat mechanics that are associated with it. So it is kind of fun. There's a couple parts that are aggravating. Pretty much if you like indie platformers, or if you like platforming games, if you beat Super Meat Boy, it's worth adding to the Steam wish list and grabbing it when it's super on sale or on the Humble Indie Bundle or something. Plus the soundtrack is
in
bomber.
A similar vein, in a much less indie sense. People should also, if you like those types of games, just pick up both the Rayman games.
Yes.
Just as a PSA, if you have not done that already.
That Origins and was that Contrast? That one's got a crazy good soundtrack, too, if you like.
I have Contrast on the PS4 because I got it as part of Plus, but I haven't played it yet.
Don't.
No?
Just listen to the soundtrack.
Oh, just get the soundtrack then. Okay.
That game is...
That game seemed like...
I forgot that I played that. It does. It has a really cool premise. Unfortunately, it is made by people who don't know how to fucking playtest their video games.
Yeah. Yeah. What's other stuff?
The Trine playing? Studio made this? I don't like Trine.
Okay. Well, then, yeah, don't bother with it. I guess just get
Don't play Trine, you guys. Wizard is OP, and it makes the game less fun because of it.
I've... played Saints Row with Squiddle. We already talked about that. I did. I tried out one game just because on PC Gamer's website of the Ludum Dare. Whatever that game jam was that happened a couple weeks ago.
Oh, okay, yeah.
It was basically it was a game jam where they talked about you only get one was this week's or this year's theme. And so what this game was, it's pretty much you're playing John Carpenter's The Thing. Where you're a guy and you have two guys cornered, and you only have one bullet. And you know one of them is the creature that will copycat and murder everyone if it escapes. And so you just, like, you have 300 seconds before the room fills up with gas, and you have to decide and take your shot and all that. So that was neat. When you shoot, you don't know if you're right or not, which is kind of annoying.
Do you ever find out if you were right?
No, it's just like as soon as you choose to shoot, it says like message from the developers. Thank you for playing this game. We wanted to take this.
God, that's horrible.
It's got to live with your decisions, man. Consequences.
You know, 48. Get, like the issue is they wanted to put the emphasis on not if you're right or not, but how you felt along the way. Because so indie game jam.
If I were to make a game like that, I would have it set up so you have two choices, life or death. And it would have a choice. So if someone clicked death, it would do a counter. And people can look online and see how many people click death and how many people click life.
I'm reminded of a Zay Frank game along that line of just these two doors, live or die.
Stanley Parable does that two-door thing.
Yeah, two doors is fun. I think Saints Row also does the two-door thing.
It does.
In a matrixy sense.
Oh, it does. Yeah. I remember that part.
Yeah.
I took the wrong door.
Man, I was kind of disappointed when I took the wrong door.
Yeah. I was hoping there'd be something more to it, and then I was just like, oh, okay.
I've been wanting to play Dream because they didn't update for that, where I think they added a third level, but I haven't gotten around to it.
Speaking of Dream, you also backed Dreamfall, right? Were you the one that backed that? Or
I backed it.
You backed that. Okay.
Yeah.
So have you heard anything more? They keep sending out emails, but I haven't read it. I'm waiting for, like, it's been released. You can now beta test it and
No, we're still a little far away off from that, but they did in the most recent one. I haven't gotten a chance to watch it, but in the most recent update they sent out, GameSpot did a coverage of it, and they actually show actual gameplay.
Okay.
I guess the game is currently about three quarters of the way through playable.
Okay.
But not in the sense of, like, somebody outside the studio being able to play it. Like, a lot of the story beats are missing. A lot of the puzzles are not fleshed out. Like, you have to know exactly what you need to do in order to play through it. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, progress is definitely being made on the game. I really want to see the gameplay. I'm super interested in seeing
what that game looks like. Which game is this? Dreamfall Chapters, the adventure game?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm so
I don't know anything about this.
You should go and buy The Longest Journey on Steam, and if you like that, yeah, and if you like that, then also buy Dreamfall: The Longest Journey, which is a sequel.
Oh, both of them are on Steam. Oh, I can just get them both for $25. That seems like a lot for games that came out this long ago.
Yeah, Dreamfall, the second game alone is like $20, which, I mean, just. It'll go on sale.
Yeah.
Will it?
It's a great game, though. Combat's terrible, but the game is great.
So it's a Telltale game.
Jeez.
Nice. Yeah,
speaking
I guess.
Speaking of which, I wonder when Telltale is going to make their Duck Dynasty game. Do you think they're going to get commissioned to do that?
I wonder when Telltale is going to do an original property.
Oh.
I don't know. Is poker. At the inventory, is that an original?
I mean, no. It's poker.
They created the inventory. That was something that wholly theirs. That boatman and everything.
Nope.
Not theirs. Okay. Well, maybe that's what. Maybe that's why Sean Vanaman and whatnot left to make that Acapulco studio. I can't remember the name of it. Campo Santo. That's it.
Acapulco.
I knew it was something that rhymed. That's but yeah, funny. That's maybe Campo Santo is going to be. Because they got
all, like, all kinds of stuff going on, and none of it is original in terms of the subject matter.
Yeah.
Got yeah, four I mean, things like, going on right now.
The girl from Iwo Jima.
They got four things, you guys.
What's the studio that makes the Lego games?
Traveler's Tales?
Traveler's Tales, yeah. Like, they're both kind of doing the same thing. Like, they're just, like... Fuck making anything original, especially given that Traveler's Tales, you know, they made Lego City Undercover, and we see how well that did. I think they're going the safe bet. Like, make something that is big in pop culture right now, and you know, make a compelling game out of it, and print money.
Man, those Lego games though are actually pretty good.
I'm kind of excited that the
Telltale games.
I think I heard right that the Lego MMO is starting up again.
Starting up
again. There's been a few different attempts at a Lego MMO.
Oh, okay. Well,
I think it's like
Lego Universe. One that is shut down and then it's coming back or something.
Well, sort of. See, there's this one called Lego Universe, which I think is the one that's getting restarted, that was like looked really nice, really good ideas, and they were planning for a release like 2 months after Minecraft's Halloween update came out, which launched that thing into the spotlight, and just everyone was like, wow, this is a much better game than we could make.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I think like it launched and then just... Very shortly after, just
it like died. Launched in, I want to say 2010 and shut down early 2012.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
It lasted like just over a year, something like Jeez. That. I want to say it was subscription based, which was a really weird choice.
If I mean, I'm back right. then wasn't as weird a choice, but
for a Lego game, go like assuming what your target audience is for a Lego game. So it seems weird to me.
Yeah. I think part of the thing is if it is subscription based, it keeps trolls out, or at least as many trolls.
But I don't know. Also keeps a lot of like kids out when they were the target audience for a Lego game.
Well, isn't it what they were saying is there's an article I was reading somewhere. It said that somebody was stating basically that, you know, all the kids in my frat club want Lego games where they're targeted towards kids, and all the kids want all the hardcore like Killzone games. You know, for Christmas. Yeah. And I thought it was kind of interesting that there's this, you know, all the adults kind of want to play the kid games. Kids want to play the adult games. So I just thought that was kind
of
interesting.
Lego Lord of the Rings is really good, you guys.
Yeah.
It looked good. It did. I never played it, but it did look good.
All right, and then just the last thing that's new with me. Well, there's one other thing I guess we'll talk about. Dur and I have been playing around with Game Maker, which has been a neat thing.
Right, Dur? Yeah, I saw that Durin was quote-unquote in-game with that.
Yeah, a lot of that was me forgetting to to close the program because I don't think about it since it's not a game.
He's been trying to get those Steam trading cards for Game Maker on Steam.
You're trying to get those card packs to drop? I understand.
Yep.
Legit.
We made the most basic of games, and it was interesting. And
you were ecstatic.
What's that?
You were ecstatic. He was like, I actually made this. This is awesome.
Yeah, no, it was cool. Like, the thing about it was, though, is like I had to try so hard not to just go in and start futzing with it and just seeing what I could change and make.
At a point, you just have to let it be, man.
Just say it was over. I'm done. It's developed. Yeah. And let's go on to the next project.
So, this knowledge on a new
I guess the next thing. I guess the next project is a side scrolling shooter, so that should be fun.
Oh, really? I don't think anyone's made one of those in a while.
No, not at all.
No.
When are you going to make your platformer, your pixel art platformer?
That's the third tutorial.
Yeah, third one.
Okay.
Well, when you're ready for that, let me know, and I'll start finishing up my lore of my Black Sparrow of Time.
But we still got to make that dungeon crawler with DM controls.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's the end game of all this.
Yeah.
Well, the end game of all this is get comfortable with the concept and the process of making games, and then learn how to code in Unity.
Yeah.
And it's okay, because I downloaded WordPress today, so I'm going to start. Because I know some basic HTML. I just want to actually figure out how to get something running from scratch. And then once I get it running, I'll mess with the CSS of it and the HTML and all that. So, web design, you guys.
Awesome. Learning,
yes.
The more you know.
And the very last thing is I saw All Is Lost, a movie starring only Robert Redford.
So was that as depressing as you thought it was going to be?
Yes, it was more terrifying than depressing.
Okay, it was solidarity of it all.
Well, no, it's just like the horror, the slow build sort of thing, like the one that just keeps building tension. Like,
is this his like Castaway?
He just gets more and more fucked the longer it goes on.
See, Durin actually tried describing it to Castaway as well, and it's not quite Castaway because Castaway. Tom Hanks is on a plane and then wakes up on an island, and you aren't going to die in an hour on an island.
So no. Basically, what it is, the short description of it is: remember when he left the island and was on his little raft thing?
Okay.
And then they like basically kind of cut to he gets saved or whatever.
All right.
This is basically that whole sequence that they cut out.
Yeah. And this is all you can get from a trailer. It stars only Robert Redford, which actually I love when they did the credits. They just said cast Robert Redford and then went to the next set, like next thing. But, he wakes up, while sleeping on his, you know, sailing boat, like one man yacht sort of thing. And some shipping container full of shoes. Durin was right. Those were shoes in the trailer, has like dented his ship. And so he's like the first half hour is just him doing everything he can to like take control of that. Sort of like, okay, circle around, figure out how big the damage is. And then it was kind of neat, watching that whole thing play out. But then he gets into a storm and like the ship, I don't want to spoil too much, but then his ship really gets screwed. And it's that slow build of like, oh man, you can see in his face, he knows he's screwed sort of thing. Like he knows this will probably be the death of him.
Can I correct you on one thing?
Go ahead.
It's a yacht.
I said yacht.
You said ship.
Okay.
Actually, I believe he said sailing ship thing.
Okay. So thing.
You know what? Since I'm doing the editing of this, we'll find out after the music when this thing is over. I might just add me in saying yacht.
I'm actually gonna watch this probably on Christmas Day with my family then. Because I grew up on the weekends going on my stepfather's boat and going out into the Gulf and doing stuff. And
the
I didn't
boat or yacht?
A 42-foot Morgan Outlander.
Okay.
Actually, if you want to get Outlander, I think it's Outlander, something like that, technically. Yeah, 42-foot Morgan, sailing vessel. So this will kind of hit home for him, because when we were out there multiple times, we would have issues with the engine, would stop working to like get us back. We'd have no wind, and then we'd have to repair it with things that were on the ship, the Morgan,
the vessel
to get it back home. And at one point, we got it almost all the way back to the port and get a tow in from a tow vessel back to the docks, because it had issues. So I think he'll dig that then.
Yeah, but it's a awesome movie if you're into like sailing or just like that sense of dread. The ending I wish I'd walked out on instead of watching, but if I explained what happened, I would be spoiling it. So I'll leave you to get pissed off at the ending like I did.
All right.
And I think with that, is there anything else anybody on the table, virtual table, wanted to discuss? We should go to plugs.
I would actually like to discuss albums of the year.
Yes.
I know that Shin and I have put together our top albums of the year. I think he did a top five list. I did a top 10. So
we might have bored Shin Boy to death with that talking of movie.
Okay. Well, then here's what I'll do. I will go with my top 10 albums of the year, which I will throw out there, and actually starting from 10 to 1.
Maybe talking of quality music will revive him.
Okay. Well, let's start with number 10. Number 10, I have Volbeat, Outlaw Gentlemen and Shady Ladies for 2013. All of these are 2013. They are not in a year prior or in the future, because I don't have time travel yet. So number 10 is Volbeat, Outlaw Gentlemen and Shady Ladies.
Okay.
Number 9, I have Avantasia, The Mystery of Time. Number 8 is going to be Jorn, a Traveler album.
Is that Jorn or Bjorn?
Jorn, J-O-R-N, or it's probably Jorn if you do it in the dialect from where he hitters. I may be wrong on that completely. Number 7 is going to be Daft Punk, Random Access Memories.
Nice.
Which I was bummed about in my own case, because I was hoping it was more techno-y than disco-y.
Yeah, there's like two solid on there, and maybe like 5 or 6 that are nice to listen to, in my opinion.
I will say my favorite thing about that album is when I can't pull it up as quickly as I want to. There's a track on there where one of the guys is talking about how he did disco
Giorgio.
Yeah. When he did it before it was really famous, and how he got it started. And I loved listening to him. Like if they did this as a documentary where they just had all the people talking about how disco came to be. And I think that would have been awesome. Like, and this would have been like the soundtrack to that documentary. That would have been perfect. But that's just my take. Number 6 is going to be Eminem's The Marshall Mathers LP2.
A lot of people did not like that album.
A lot of people didn't like it, but I still like a lot of the stuff that Eminem puts out, because I like the way he puts words together. And I
haven't listened to the album, but man, the single from that was real good.
Yeah, the single was good, and some of the other stuff that's not even on the single is actually pretty good. And I like how he's putting it together. I'm looking forward to like a new album that's not a follow-up album. So hopefully that is...
I know Jeff Gerson was not too hot on that.
But I know. He was kind of bummed about that. But I liked it when he did... they did the one that was Eminem and... Was it like Back to Hell or what was it? I don't know. Was there a previous one? He did the duo where he got back with one of his old... His old buddies after a feud for a couple of years, and that was actually really good. And I'm going to get shit on by a lot of people that know it and I don't, so I'm sorry. I apologize. Number 5, which is a people will contest and vehemently chastise me for, is Dream Theater's Dream Theater album.
It's a bad album. It's a boring fucking album.
Well, see, it's the one beef I have with of the year discussions is this is your soundtrack music album.
Yeah,
of the year.
Obviously these are all personal lists.
Yeah. Sure. And the one thing that makes Dream Theater's number 5 on my list for me is because earlier in this year, I think it was this year. Was it last year? It was this year. No? Yes?
Sure.
This year. Yeah. I went to actually go see them live when they came to my town. And I didn't realize that at some point, because I had never listened to all of Dream Theater's like previous library catalog and stuff. So I only knew a couple of songs from some of the albums. And I'm like, man, these songs are really good. I really enjoyed them live. They were really, really good. And I ended up listening to this album, and I'm like, I've heard this somewhere before. And I didn't realize that they were playing like three or four tracks from their new album while on tour.
Well, yeah, most bands do that.
Right. But most bands I've gone to see have never done that. They just kind of play like their current album that's out. And it's because people were like,
Winter Sun, they played something off of Time too.
They did. No, they did.
But I remember the Fire.
Yeah. God. I wish I could go back to that moment.
The song was pretty good.
But before then, my only experience with bands was they kind of play what's out right now. They don't really go back to their old catalog unless you were a 60s or 70s. Like if I'm listening to Styx or if I'm listening to Journey, you know, they're going to play a lot of their older stuff. But they never really play a lot of their newer stuff because people want the older stuff. That's what they like. I was just expecting from a current band standpoint that they would just play what they have out now and not really play anything in the future. So I was kind of ecstatic when I heard it. I was like, I was there. I heard that. It makes my top five for emotional reasons.
Because I saw – this is actually a meshing of topics here.
Okay.
I saw Dream Theater open for Iron Maiden.
Oh.
And then during that show, Iron Maiden played a song from their yet-to-be-released album. I forgot the name of that album was. The most recent one. They played El Dorado, which is a pretty solid track. But yeah, I don't know. That album, I think, is super boring.
It's not as heavy as a lot of their older stuff, but it's more melodic, and I like the more melodic part to them. They do a really good job with it, so that's why I liked it. But
that album is so far up its own ass, let me tell you. It really – you can't – even if you like that album, you cannot deny that.
Yeah, I guess. I mean,
Dream Theater has always been sort of bad in that regard, but this album, whew. It's a problem with progressive music as a whole.
Well, any progressive band, I think, thinks that they are the one god of the universe. I think any progressive band has that.
I think I get that more from this Dream Theater album than any other album I've listened to recently.
Right, but okay. So where every band says that the guitarist thinks that he's the number one person in the world and he's the badass of the group, and in progressive music, the entire band is the badass of the group, and they don't give a shit about anybody else. From what I've, you know, they are number one. They are the only one. So they all have their kind of like persona and very, you know, uppity personality.
And Mike Portnoy is no longer drumming for them. So Dream Theater might as well not exist as far as I'm concerned.
But anyway, that's why it made my top five, probably because I saw them live and I heard some of the songs that where I saw live. So from there, number four is Mark Knopfler's Privateering. I've always been a fan of Mark Knopfler. And it's ironically, I never knew the songs I listened to growing up that my father listened to was Mark Knopfler until I heard one of his songs on an album that was released. I looked him up and I realized he was the lead singer for Dire Straits, and I had no idea my entire life. Yeah. And so I've been going back and listening to all of Dire Straits stuff and kind of getting back in touch with all the music my dad used to listen to. So that was kind of a cool thing for me. Number three is Amon Amarth's Deceiver of the Gods.
It's a great album.
It was a very good album. They went more melodic with this album than heavy. And I think it was a great move for them. Did really well. And I've listened to it constantly since it came out, probably on repetition, mostly on my,
MP3. The end of Shapeshifter is so intense.
It's such a good album all around. I absolutely love the opening is phenomenal.
Yep, it's a good opener.
Yeah. I think Shin might have this one on his. I don't know. I'm just going to say it probably is. But Arion or Arjen Lucianus?
Lucasins.
Lucasins. Arion album, The Theory of Everything. I finally listened to it on the airplane when I was on there a while ago. And it was phenomenal. I really liked it. Great audio to it. He doesn't ever put out a bad album. I will say that everything he puts out is stellar in its own way.
I'm not a big fan of that Stream of Passion album, but okay.
That, okay, I'm not going to try to argue that one.
Out of the Real World's a pretty good song, but other than that,
it all of it has its own place, I will say.
Yeah.
I won't say that anything that he does should feed off of what he did before or in the future. It all has its own little place, little gem in history.
That Guilt Machine album's pretty good.
Guilt Machine was pretty good. Wasn't the best, but it was
pretty good. That album is really sad, you guys.
It is, especially when you read all the words. If you actually read the lyrics.
Here we go. Going back to Guilt Machine to get off track of this Arion album. The music deals, this is from the Wikipedia page, I believe it's a quote from them saying, "The music deals with the destructive psychology of guilt, regret, and the darkest form of secret, the secrets we hide from ourselves."
Yep. It's pretty depressing at some point. I think one of the main characters gets shot in the song, and he's talking about how he's dying at some point.
Wait, midway through a chorus, you just hear a gunshot, and he's like, "Oh no!"
Thurb, you're joking here, but the dude who wrote all this, Arjen Anthony Lucassen, the reason this album came to be and its music is themed the way it is because he was going through a deep depression and was borderline suicidal when he wrote it.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
So
it's really good because it is written from the point of somebody going through that. It's not just someone who's I'm emo and I'm going to try to express myself, so it really does. It does a really well job of encompassing those emotions and throwing them out to you.
Yeah. Theory of Everything's great.
Number one on my list, which many people won't like, or I like it just because it's a fun fucking album. Glory Hammer, Tales from the Kingdom of Fife.
That's a pretty good name.
Is absolutely great. And what was the one song you talked about? It was the
I don't remember. Look at this.
I gotta find
it's
it.
The one you sent me. It's the one with the music video. Oh, wait, no. Oh, sorry.
But that was
Unicorn Angus. Invasion of Dundee.
Yeah, Unicorn Invasion of Dundee is probably the best opener for any album I have ever heard because it's not taking itself too seriously, and it is just funny as hell, and it's really powerful and gets you boosted and going. Great, great, great opener.
When the bonus track for your album is just called Wizards with an exclamation point.
Yep.
I'm on board.
So that's why that makes my number one because I've listened to that over and over, especially the song. What was it? Oh, yeah. Angus McFife. Oh, is absolutely great. So actually from the keyboardist is the one that got this group together. And it was the keyboardist from is the vocalist from Ailstorm is the keyboardist for Glory Hammer. So that's kind of how I found those two. That's how that tied in. And
back into our previous discussion, we were all listening to Ailstorm while playing Guns of Icarus the other day.
We were. Oh, that was pretty good. So, but that's my top 10. I have it might be in the show notes, my runners up 11 through 17 for this year, but I'll let you read those if you choose to, but that's my 1 through 10, top 10. And I will pass the torch on to Shinboy.
I only had 5 albums this year that I thought were worthy of a spot on a list. I thought this year was pretty much a downer when it came to a lot of music.
It was.
I'm pretty sure I saw it on your list, Traveler. That album's okay. I didn't think it was worthy of really a top X list. It has some solid tracks like Legend Man is really good.
What was the one with the engines?
Make My Engine Scream, something like that. I don't know. Yeah. That's a pretty solid song though.
Yeah.
Here we go. I need to think about the order of these. Number 5, I think it was in your list as well. Volbeat's Outlaw Gentlemen and Shady Ladies. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty good album. I'm going to go through most of these are actually on your list as well. Number 4, Amon Amarth, Deceiver of the Gods. I actually have that album on right now because since you mentioned it, I decided to listen to it. Number 3 is from Carcass, Surgical Steel.
I never listened to them. You sent me the link earlier, and I started listening.
Yeah. Carcass was around a while ago. They did a lot of the early stuff is a lot of grindcore, which is probably one of my least favorite genres of music. But this is their first album, I want to say, since the late 90s. And pretty much the whole point of the album is yo, guys, modern death metal is really bad. Let's make a good death metal album. They went out and made about the straightest death metal album you can make, but it's really good.
Okay.
It's just no frills, just really solid death metal album.
I think my issue with metal is that there's so many different facets with it right now. You have doom metal, death metal.
If you want, just like, yo, this is some heavy metal, go listen to this album. There's like, there's not dealing with any real crazy subgenres or any of that. It's just, yo, we're going to make a really good metal album.
Okay.
Number two, Daft Punk's Random Access Memories.
See, I talked about that when you were gone, and that was my number seven.
Oh, that album's so good.
Well, yeah.
I love pretty much everything Daft Punk has ever done, including Human After All.
It's great. And like I said, my only argument to it was that if it was the album to a documentary about disco, I think it would have been excellent if it was posed that way. It was less techno, more disco than I was expecting.
But I think they pulled off the retro sound better than
they did
anyone else.
They did. I will definitely,
while still also modernizing it to an extent.
I will definitely agree with that.
Like that album, yeah. Oh, that album's so good. And that was my number one album of the year for a while, until the latter half of the year, when Arian's Theory of Everything was released. Oh. My numero uno.
Excellent. I'm so glad you got into prog. I know you weren't into prog for a while, and you kind
of
jumped.
Mostly because I had listened to a lot of Dream Theater and went, man, this music's up its own ass.
Okay.
But yeah, that album is everything I'm looking for. It's not, I actually don't think it's his best Arian album.
It's not.
The Human Equation is still probably the best one, in my opinion.
Yeah, I absolutely love The Human Equation. The funny thing about that album, it was out of print for the longest time. I think it still is out of print, or the first Arian one is. I can't remember. And a friend of mine at a CD store said, hey, I have this album. You should really listen to it. It just came in because someone traded it. I listened to it. I bought it. And I've been stoked I had it ever since.
Yeah. Human Equation is so, so good. But the thing that surprised me about Theory of Everything is just how heartbreaking it is.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
It's a sad album.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it kind of for me, to kind of bring it a little home, it kind of ties into when I was young and they wanted me to take medication for my hyperactivity that I had when I was really young. So it kind of was like, kind of hit home a little bit, you know, with the whole, like, one side of the parents didn't want me to take the medication. The other side did to help me out. So that was, it was really well done in that aspect.
Also, I'm not a big Lacuna Coil or Camelot fan. And I thought the chick from Lacuna Coil and the guy from Camelot were both excellent.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, what?
Dude from Nightwish.
One of the things he really does is, and I love how he brings other people from other bands that they shine more in his albums, I think, than they do in their own band when they play. I think I want to give that to his writing and the roles that he writes.
He's
for
an
them,
excellent
definitely. Yeah. So yeah, they did a great job, definitely.
So yeah, that's my top five. You should all of you people should listen to The Theory of Everything. And by listen to it, I mean wait until it's late at night, put on a pair of really nice headphones, and just lay down with the lights off and nothing else going on. Just listen to that album from start to finish.
Speaking of headphones, you might think I'm crazy because you know how I am with
your mobile DAC.
Yeah. I actually sent off my UE900 earphones, in-ear monitors that I have.
In-ear monitors. That's such a contradictory phrase.
That's what they are. They're called IEMs, in-ear monitors. And I sent them off to get them actually – and I know a lot of people are not going to like this if there are audiophiles out there listening to this. But I did send them out to get actually reshelled with custom in-ear molds. I went to my audiologist and had my ears molded. And I sent the molds with those to this guy, and he's going to basically make a mold with them and then put all the drivers and everything in the headphones so they fit my ear perfectly and no more having to buy, little foam pieces to stick in your ear and they go bad.
Because I don't like in-ear headphones at all.
Yeah, if you do custom molds, they'd be 10 times better than...
Man, you said UE900, right?
Yeah, UE900.
These things are several hundred dollars. Holy hell.
Yeah, they are $500 headphones, I believe. And I'm going to have somebody...
No way.
I'm going to have somebody actually break them apart and recast them in an in-ear mold. So, but that is better than paying $1,300 for the custom ones from UE or Westone or any other companies that have the same driver, the same amount of drivers in them I'm just not going to pay that much money for it. So this
guy
can
just give me these big over your headphones. That's all I need. I got these Sennheiser. I'm happy.
So, but that's my little story about that. So I was kind of excited.
I had to go to Radio Shack today actually for these, to get some for these headphones, because my sound card, where the mic in and standard like headphone out ports are, they're right next to each other. And I need a 1/4 inch to 3.5 millimeter converter for these headphones. And that thing's kind of wide. And the cable I had for the end was also kind of wide. So they're pushing against each other. And it bent the end of my converter. So I need to go get a new one.
Ooh. Okay.
That was a fun trip, because I accidentally bought the mono one the first time and came back. I'm like, this sounds weird.
Well, I could spend hours talking about audio stuff and cables.
Let's do it. Audio podcast.
Audio podcast? Is that what's going to be next week?
This podcast is going to be Lossless FLAC. $24.96
FLAC. Oh, that would be hilarious. It's going to be about a gig, this entire thing.
7.1 $24.96 FLAC. See, 7.1 wouldn't make any sense in that sense, because it's not really directional.
True. FLAC can be compressed. So uncompressed FLAC.
Well, the 2496, the 96 kilohertz one.
Yeah. And it's going to be 1 to 2 gigs long, big for this entire thing. So
I have some music in that. Let me look at this Lady Gaga album.
I mean,
yeah, this copy of Bad Romance, just one song, is 113 megs.
To any listeners who might be worried, it won't be a gig. Well, unless you go for another 2.5 hours, then it'll be a gig.
Okay.
But it's only that big on my side before
I have it. That's why.
Well, no, I'm recording on a high enough bitrate, but then we clean it up and cut it stuff down. Like, I'm not saying I'm going to cut down all this conversation.
What I'm saying is, that if would the bit be rate
oh,
is
no,
under
we would never do that.
Yeah.
If the bitrate is under 3,000 kbps, you have failed us all.
I'm sorry, Shinboy, I failed you all. Do you have any other plugs for this week?
Not particularly.
Okay.
I do.
Except, hold on. I'm going to ask the people, the good people
who listen to this. Of the internet land.
Of the internet land. Do I want to play? I need a good old school JRPG to play through. That's not Final Fantasy VI, because I'm already playing through that. I need suggestions from the good people. That's also not Secret Panda.
How old school, and how are you going to be playing this?
I can emulate any of them. It's not a big deal.
Ni no Kuni?
How old school, though?
Like,
are we talking, like, what era?
Fantasy whatever. Star, the original.
Whatever, man. Fantasy Star, that's not a bad option.
Really, really
like,
great.
Like, are we talking yeah. like nothing post-PlayStation?
So, like, or? I would say everything except for PS1 games. No FF9.
Okay. But, like, PS2 and on is fine, too?
I already have a started save in Final Fantasy XII International Zodiac Job System.
I would like to mention...
When you're asking for a JRPG, though, are you talking, like active time battle JRPG, or just something made in Japan?
Don't matter.
Okay.
If people have a suggestion for you, they can contact you either at the Leancast on Twitter...
What's your suggestion, Darren?
I would highly, highly, highly recommend Rogue Galaxy for the PlayStation 2.
Is that an ironic suggestion, or is that an actual suggestion?
No, that's actually a fucking great game. By the people who made Dark Cloud?
I don't know that game.
A lot of people really liked Dark Cloud. I didn't play it, but Rogue Galaxy is probably my favorite RPG on the PS2.
Does it emulate well? Actually, I have a PS2.
It emulates pretty well. The only thing I noticed whenever I ran the emulation was some weird modeling on like the weapons, on some weapons. But other than that, it ran fine.
Okay. Maybe. I'm always looking for more Japanese games to start and never finish, so.
Yeah.
Sweet.
All right, cool.
Durin,
any
plugs?
Oh, wait, that's a level 5 joint. Okay, I know exactly who you're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've been watching it on eBay and just wanting to rebuy a copy of it, because I snapped mine. That was when I snapped whenever I was.
I've been thinking about picking up Attack of the Friday Monsters on 3DS.
No idea what that is, but all right.
Level 5.
I don't think I have any plugs other than everyone should go play Rogue Galaxy. I keep wanting to call it Rogue Legacy. God damn it.
That is one of the things I'm watching on Steam if it goes on sale or Humble.
Rogue Odyssey? Oh, you had it already.
No, I don't.
Wow, Level 5 owns the naming rights to a soccer stadium in Japan. That's weird.
Yeah.
All right.
Squiddle, I believe you said you had a plug?
Yeah, so in early January, actually the third week of January, I'm going to be out at FadeCon in Dallas. If anybody who listens to this is going to that, give me a hey, how you doing? My name will be Squiddle as well. But the reason I brought it up is because FadeCon is actually being sponsored by Bethesda and Gearbox Software. We're also going to have developers from Apogee and some other people there as well from the Houston, Dallas area. I can't remember what companies they are.
Please inform the uninformed like myself. What is FadeCon?
So FadeCon is a group of people that started a convention that would happen before QuakeCon every year. And so it started at somebody's house named Fade, and they ended up broadening it to more people than just his friends. And a friend of mine at work said, hey, do you want to come? And I said, sure. So I signed up. And the best part about all this, in my opinion, is I'm going to have an entire case of Ball's energy drink sitting at my station when I get there. So it's basically just gaming. I actually pulled up the email because we're going to be playing some crazy stuff. I think what they're saying is Unreal Tournament 2004, UT3, Battlefield 1942, Team Fortress 2, Left 4 Dead 2, Rise of the Triad, we will also be playing, and Quake 3.
This all sounds amazing.
And so it's 24 hours of all the beer you can drink. Basically, it's all free beer, open bar, all the food you can eat, and gaming for 24 hours.
Why don't I live in Texas?
So shout out to anybody who's going to be there. Hit me up, Squiddle. I'll have my name tag on, which is a giant floppy disk I'll have around my neck.
One more thing, Squiddle.
When did you say this is going on? Next weekend?
No, January the 18th.
Squiddle, I have one more music question on top of our music thing.
Okay.
Now that we gave your top 10 of this year, what's your most anticipated of next year?
Of next year, if it comes out, Time 2, Winter Soldier.
Okay.
That is my if it comes out, that is my most anticipated next year. Because the number one on my list would have been Winter Sun's Time 1 if it came out in 2013. Because I still listen to that every single week. Every single week, religiously.
So good. I would say mine has to be Iced Earth, Plagues of Babylon. Simply because it's coming out in Europe on like the 6th, which means that's when it'll be online.
Hey, do you want to go to Europe and go see them live?
That's the show in April.
We can make it. I mean,
maybe. I'm only going to see them live in New York.
Oh. I'm going to miss
Special guest Sabaton.
Shut up. God.
And Sabaton.
Hey, if any of you listeners out there live in the New York area and want to spot me a room for a week, please let me know, because I would love to go see Sabaton the week after PAX East. And I'm going to be, if I can, I will get back to New York, chill there until I can go see it with Shin. There's my shameless plug.
Yeah, there we go. Let me live with you for a week. There's my plug.
Yeah, let me live with you for a week. I don't eat much. Just give me beer. I live off of beer. I'll be fine.
And I guess my plugs will be check out the Ludum Dare, or Ludum Dar, I never know how to pronounce that. A couple of neat things from there. This is the season to be watching the Steam store for flash sales and daily deals.
It is the season indeed.
As well as the Humble Indie Store, or the Humble Bundle / Store, I guess, because they have some deals. I think Starbound is for sale on there. But I don't think it's on sale, at least at the time of this recording.
Yeah.
But you want to know what is on sale?
Dive Kick
from such indie companies as Iron Galaxy.
This is Dave Lang.
Next time I see Dave Lang, I'm going to call him out on that. It's like, why is your not indie game company putting stuff on the indie store?
To be fair, Guild Wars 2 is on
there. Guild Wars 2 has been on there before, too.
And Alan Wake is on there now, so...
Yeah. Thanks for listening. All the way to the end. You guys are awesome.
Super Hexagon is 59 cents.
Yeah.
Wolf Among Us. I might buy that one.